major developments on controversial affordability checks, the rebirth of Toaster, and all the reflections from the July Festival, all coming up in this week's edition of The Front Page. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page. I'm Jonathan Harding, your host for today, and I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Lewis Porteous and via video link by Matt Rennie to chew over what was a massive week of news. But we'll start with some lighter stuff. We'll start with the July Festival and discuss some of the winners and losers from a sweltering few days at Newmarket. Lewis, we'll start with you. Donica O'Brien, another Group 1 for him. Tell me all about it.
Well, yeah, it was a more success for the O'Brien family this time. Donica with Comanche Brave in the July Cup. Horse that was sort of quite well beaten at Ascot, but took a big step forward to win the big race over the 3 days on the July course. What I like about Donica is he's clearly not afraid to pitch his horses in. They become battle hardened by running in the good races, and then they seem to keep on improving. He's obviously learned that from his dad, and it's a division that we know is wide open, but on the day under Billy Lochnane, he was a comfortable winner and a worthy winner, John.
And just a word on Billy Lochnane, he's made an absolutely blistering start to the season, winning big races, but crucially also in the lead in the title race. It's early days, but you'd be brave to bet against them.
Absolutely. He's had sort of considerably more rides than anyone else as well. So he's becoming one of those go-to jockeys. He's got the quality and the quantity. And I think O'Sheen was saying the other day that he's got a few sort of trips abroad penciled in, which is going to really give Billy the chance to sort of build and extend on that lead. It'll be interesting to see the numbers going in and coming out of Goodwood. But like you say, with the bit between his teeth and more of these big stables backing Billy now, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with for many years to come.
No, absolutely right. And will Comanche Brave, Matt, as Lewis touched on there, it is a wide open division, but it was a very impressive performance. Top of the pile now, do you think?
Not for me. I'd still have Venetian Sun at the top, albeit she was beaten. I thought it was a terrific run in second, given there were murmurs during the week that she was in season. You know, these rattling fast conditions aren't where she could be seen at her brilliant best. And to do what she did in finishing second to Comanche Grave, Brave, albeit she was getting weight, I still thought it was a really, really big run by her. But in this sprinting division, again, over the last couple of years, you wouldn't bet your bottom dollar against any horse who's gonna take a step forward and be that champion sprinter. Who knows? It looks like you're better off chancing yourself at 100-1 shot in the likes of the Nunthorpe and the Sprint Cup again and the champion sprint for the rest of the season, because it's just such a merry-go-round. So, but at least that makes the division really fascinating in a way. I don't mind it when some horses dominate, as long as, you know, if they're brilliant and dominating, but this is just an extra difficult puzzle for, if you're as a punter, to try and solve. So I thought it was a great performance and a boost to Kai Ying Rising's form as well. Obviously Comanche Brave was beaten by him in Hong Kong earlier this season, so maybe that's where the best sprinter, or we know he's the best sprinter in the world, albeit we are unlikely to see him on these shores, sadly.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a Front Page episode without some reference to Kai Ying Rising. Matt, who were the other standout horses for you over the last few days?
Definitely Al Gudeva in the Superlative Stakes, purely because this is quite clearly a high-class horse. Yet he's a bit of a fruitcase as well. He's got a few quirks in him, as we saw. He dumped Tom Marcon onto the ground when he looked like he had the race at his mercy at Yarmouth a couple of months ago. And he seemed like William Bruce said there, he ducked a little bit in the finish as well in the Superlative Stakes. So if they can iron out his little bit of craziness he's got, then he could be really, really top notch. But I quite like the fact he's got that little quirk about him. It makes him quite a bit more sort of affectionate towards that horse. The July Festival, it's a funny one, really. It comes quite soon after Ascot, and it feels far more relaxed. It's obviously far more relaxed than Ascot was. And, you know, I was really disappointed that the July Stakes only got up three runners this year. You've taken that, some high-class juveniles still came out. Senorita Benita, you had to be incredibly impressed with. And when Simon Crisford, and obviously Ed, until he goes at the end of the year over to Dubai to train for Sheikh Ahmed Almut too, have a good juvenile, they rarely miss the target in a way, and she did look like, to me, the winner of the pre-morning in waiting.
Yeah, a lot of good juvenile performances. Interesting, the July Festival has always been this battleground between Godolphin and Ballydoyle. Charlie Appleby generally does quite well at the July Festival. It's been a lean few weeks for him, but it did feel as though maybe just roaring back a little bit. William Buick had a lot of winners for him.
It's definitely felt like Godolphin coming to the party, didn't it, this last week? I think that's healthy for the sport. You don't want one superpower dominating. Godolphin have historically served it up to Ballydoyle, and there were a couple of battles on the track between the two horses this week. I think what's most pleasing probably for Charlie Appleby was the couple of two-year-olds really emerging, as Matt said, Al Havida and Inner City Blues. He won, like Matt said, a three-runner July Stakes, but there was something quite clinical about the way he put the race to bed. He's by Blue Point, and there was a bit of his sire about him. He's going to be a real top-class sprinter, hopefully, going forward, while Al Hudeba is probably more potentially your Guinness hope for next season. And, of course, he had the old boy Rebels Romance doing what Rebels Romance does win. He's obviously coming to the end now, maybe with another run in Germany, followed by a swan song at the Breeders' Cup. But I think the season needed Godolphin to sort of come to the party at some stage, and thankfully they did last week.
No, absolutely. And quite telling and quite interesting was Charlie Appleby, while he was mapping out plans for Al Hudeba, saying, "We'll just wait and see over the next couple of weeks whether we unearth any more two-year-olds." That's a tantalising prospect. You might have another couple waiting at home.
I think you kind of play the hand you're dealt, don't you? Sometimes you get these precocious ones. And obviously, clearly, he's just got the more slow burner ones this season. And it sounds like there are more waiting in the wings at home. So it bodes well, because it has been a testing time for them this season. Like, he was, you know, had hardly anything at Royal Ascot. So it's a meeting they traditionally target the July Festival, and they did it to great success last week again.
And Matt, the flip side, obviously, of Charlie Appleby winning is Aidan O'Brien going close. Now, it has felt as though everything Aidan O'Brien touches this season turns to gold, but it was for his, by his standards and by the pace that he's set so far this season, a slightly frustrating couple of days.
Yeah, indeed. Although he did unearth a really smart juvenile in Hefner, and I think there's plenty more to come from Abraham Lincoln as well. I know he's beaten in superlative, but he was green as grass during that. I thought it's just what it is. If you were saying at the start of the season it'd be the July meeting where we sort of class him as having a barren meeting in a way, I'm sure Aidan would have snapped your hand off for it. So look, it's one of them. Precise, I think. The superstar bubble would burst around her being beaten by Blue Bolt. And that's taking nothing away from Blue Bolt. I thought it was an awesome performance to win, giving way to her as an older horse as well. And I think she's well set to win multiple Group 1s this year. And the patient approach with Andrew Boulding and Jumont have had is going to pay off in spades. Slightly disappointed. Obviously, True Love was beaten by the Secret Adversary in the Prix Jean Pratt at the weekend. But there's an Irish Oaks around the corner, King George. I'm sure it's not even a blip in an absolutely unbelievable season for O'Brien and Ballydoyle.
Matt, you touched on Fozzie Stack's winner in that French Group 1. He's been on the premises. He's a group-winning trainer. He's won a Grade 1 in the US. But this was the first European Group 1, obviously off the back of a fantastic Royal Ascot, two winners there, I believe. A trainer to follow this summer?
Absolutely so, and it shows you how good he is at what he's put a target out there on his back in delivering in spades, you know. And he's got the backing of Caton Park Stud, obviously in South Africans who have owned the Secret Adversary as well in partnership. And delivering for them could only be a good thing. I reckon he's going to attract a few more major owners into the yard. As we're saying, look, Ilo Lewis was saying Godolphin, it was great that they're back to fight Ballydoyle, but it's even greater to have these trainers that don't necessarily have the big days on the flat as well, especially. Obviously, we know Jumps, Willie Mullins is dominating, but to show his hand, about absolute dab hand that Fozzie Stack has, I mean, going to Ascot with two horses and two winners is just unbelievable. Some people may say luck, but you've got to get them there in the first place and get them primed for the day and believe that they've got that class. So, look, unbelievable for Fozzie Stack. I dare say it's going to be the first of a fair few this season. And the Secret Adversary as well. He's He's sort of been underappreciated. His performance in the Guineas trial at Leopardstown was really, really good, and he just didn't. I don't think he stayed that mile in both the one English and Irish 2000 Guineas, and 7 furlong is absolute optimum. And thankfully, these days in Europe, we've got a really strong 7 furlong Group One sort of pattern now, with the City of York Stakes being a Group One at the Ebor Festival, and he's nominated that, and then the Prix de la Forêt. So horses like him are now going to be getting the much Group One credit they do richly deserve.
Yeah, it was a great couple of days on the July course, always a meeting worth following with a view to the rest of the summer and indeed the autumn, and some light relief after a very busy news week. On Tuesday we had a major development, switching on to slightly harder news for you now, with the Gambling Commission saying that they were going to press ahead with the implementation of affordability checks. Much to the frustration of British racing, the bookmaking industry, and many punters who have voiced their concerns about the pilot, the reliability of the data that's being gathered, and just the general objection to them simply as a concept, really. Lewis, it's a disappointing development. How surprised are you that they're pressing ahead with this, given the weight of sort of opposition to them?
It beggars belief that we're here, but at the same time, I'm not surprised that they're going ahead. We were hoping for sort of a last-minute U-turn, but realistically, the history tells us that probably wasn't ever really realistically going to happen. It's so disappointing. It's going to be a real hammer blow to the sport. But I'm afraid we're dealing with people who maybe don't fully understand the true consequences, and I think racing really was resigned to the fact that this was going to get the green light. It's astonishing, really, that the previous government set out terms that this would the checks would have to be truly frictionless. The current government have said exactly the same. It's been proven that they're not truly frictionless, yet they're going ahead anyway. I mean, you can bang your head against a brick wall repeatedly, but they're obviously not willing to listen. How this can be mandated, I don't know. The DCMS should be taking this back in for a full review. But instead, they've abdicated responsibility, the government have, and that's the most disappointing thing about it.
No, absolutely. And I think certainly my frustration personally is that you have sort of this unelected body who have been given a brief and run with it, and it's no doubt well-intentioned, and it's no doubt trying to tackle problem gambling. And they've done the pilot, well within their rights to do that as well. But to then have the body of evidence, to have all the concerns, and to then not listen to them and press ahead anyway, I think if the Gambling Commission were to turn around and say, we've had this pilot, there have been these complications, we're just going to take a pull for a moment, I think that would be very well received. It has the feeling to me of pressing ahead with something through sheer desire to press ahead with it, rather than there being an actual case. And Matt, I suppose, I don't know if you agree, but my concern would be that this is ultimately going to run counter to the objective. It's going to push people away from that regulated market, because if people want to put a bet on, they will find a way to put a bet on.
Absolutely so. Absolutely so. We've seen how some of the similar situations in the Netherlands, it's ended up being really a mitigated disaster. I think for all we can say it was well-intentioned, I think the way the Gambling Commission have gone around it has been a bit of a smack in the face towards, you know, democratic processes that we live by in this country, and the rights of individual liberties as well to enjoy a fun pastime that the majority can do. So obviously I have major sympathy for people that do have, you know, problems with gambling and addiction. However, punishing the mass majority for it is not the way to go forward. And as you say, the black markets are absolutely rife, and they, you know, they're so obvious to people that people don't even realise how obvious some of them are. That's the black market companies, they're advertised, we see them on our social media channels and whatnot all the time, and people will unintentionally go straight to them, and they're gonna hoover up, you know, a power vacuum in a way. It's just, it needed a bit more sensibleness and a lot more transparency through the process to make sure that we could almost try and get it as right as possible, or in the end go, hang on, this isn't the way forward for it. I mean, that I'm firmly in the camp of it isn't the way forward for it. It absolutely should not be infringing on people's civil liberties in this way over something like this, and that actually there's far more pressing issues in the world that we should be dealing with in a way. But I'm pretty ashamed in the behaviour of the Gambling Commission when it came to, especially when it comes to, why are we not allowed to see the results of these checks and the pilot checks? You know, if we're going to do something so controversial and game-changing to a sport, especially like racing, as this, obviously, which is racing funded by the levy, why are we not having full transparency on it to be able to have a grown-up debate and come to grown-up conclusions about it? It feels very much, in the word, the language used by the Gambling Commission towards, listening to a BHA podcast, who said they wanted freedom of information request, and he said it was vexatious, the Gambling Commission to the BHA. Why are we going down this road of sort of antagonism and conflict when we really should be working together to find the rightest or the best possible solution to it? It feels like the light, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. In fact, it's just more darkness, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and Lewis, it strikes me the main issue here has been transparency related to this pilot and a bit of frustration from British Racing in particular, that it says it's put its case forward very firmly and doesn't feel as though that's been taken into account at all by people it would suggest don't perhaps have the knowledge or the desire to attain the knowledge to approach this in a sensible manner.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's nothing to hide from these results, why don't they show them us? That's really frustrating. Like I say, I think British Racing has largely been on the front foot with this one, but you know, you're talking to people who probably don't understand the full consequences, and it's hard to then negotiate with that sort of, those sort of people. The other thing is, there's still no real clarity going forward. Like, we still don't know when they're actually going to be implemented. The next step is like they've got to put together an implementation group. We're still at this stage where they still seem to be fudging it a little bit. Like they don't know that their next sort of 2, 3, 4 steps forward of how we're going to bring this to fruition now. So we could conceivably still be talking about this grey cloud over us for months, if not longer, going forward. So I feel like they want to be seen to be doing the right thing, yet there's just no real clear roadmap of implementation and how the future will look.
And in terms of what British Racing and the bookmaking industry can do, what options are available to them? I know the DCMS committee has written to the Chief Executive of the Gambling Commission outlining a few concerns or seeking clarity on a couple of things about methodology and whether racing has been listened to, whether other areas have been listened to. So that's progress of sorts. But there was reference to a possible, certainly from our reporting, I think I reported on BGC and some of the bookmakers, there was this prospect of a potential legal challenge. Do you think it needs to go that far? Do you think it will go that far?
I mean, the Betting and Gaming Council, like you said, have mooted that previously. I felt like that was like a last ditch effort at the time to just try and get someone to listen. So far, the people like Brandon Shea, speaking yesterday on Look on Sunday, was maybe distanced himself a little bit from sort of charging down that route straight off. But at the end of the day, if they're not going to listen, at some stage you're going to have to take divisive action, such as a legal challenge and some sort of judicial review. So I wouldn't rule it out in the long term, but it seems at the moment the different parties do want to maybe just try and continue with a dialogue with the Gambling Commission and government, but as we've seen so far, it's not really got us anywhere, John.
Yeah, and I can't help but think the government needs to perhaps intervene here, because clearly British Racing and the Gambling Commission and the bookmaking industry are so far from being on the same page, despite attempts to constructively be in dialogue. So it's an interesting story, a concerning story, and one that will no doubt develop in the weeks ahead. Huge consequences for the bookmaking industry and indeed racing in terms of the potential financial hit. We're not going to dwell on that too much longer, because we do have some good news to discuss. Matt Rennie, Toaster, what can you tell us?
Absolutely. It was a rare good news story from last week, which is what we all want in this day and age. I was at Toaster actually last Tuesday, kindly invited by the track and Betway to have a look around before the news broke on Thursday that they're planning on reopening the course. Obviously, it's going to be known as Betway Toaster, who are going to be one of their principal strategic partner, I believe is the official term that Betway are going to be with Toaster, and they're providing an exclusive betting partner there and have put a significant investment into Toaster itself to get it back. Look, We know it's going to be known as Betway Toaster. That's one of the parts of how we're getting it back. I don't mind it. I know some people, maybe of a certain demographic and age, will have a little bit of reservations about that. But I think, in a way, if someone's significantly investing in it and they're going to help get the racecourse back onto not only just back, but a profit-making racecourse, independent racecourse, then stuff like this might need to happen in the future, and we're all going to know it as Toaster anyway. It's not going to affect us greatly. But how brilliant is it that we are not only getting back a racecourse, but a real unique and a jumps track as well? We know that not only through affordability checks and the remote gaming duty tax being increased this year, the threats bookmakers are facing, how welcome it is to see Betway putting this significant investment into it, but in an era of jumps racing, which, you know, in the public eye in general, you know, doesn't have the greatest of views, we're getting back a jumps course and one that's completely cherished and unique. You know, as where AP McCoy rode his 4,000th winner, it's a historic race course. I mean, as I said off camera, it was my first time actually there, and I was staggered by how steep the finish is there. I've never seen anything like it. It's a real unique test for a horse, and yeah, I think you have to celebrate a racecourse coming back. The plans they've got is not just to come back. They are really ambitious, and it was really nice to hear. You know, the next steps we need to find is Toaster getting a license again, and also they're going to have to acquire and purchase some fixtures as well, with the aim of being back at sort of the end of 2027 with point-to-point racing there in the spring next year. But for now, it's all looking like that there is light at the end of the tunnel with this one. It's so good. I think it's brilliant to have a race course back, because losing race courses is hard. It's hard. It's emotional for people. We know what the threats that Kempton are under, and obviously Chelmsford doesn't have a license at the minute with its ongoing saga. So to be able to bring back a race course in the UK is incredibly positive news, and probably one we should absolutely celebrate more.
Yeah, Lewis, and it's a track close to your heart, where you cut your teeth as a young reporter. We won't say how many years ago.
Yeah, I was a regular visitor to Toaster. It's a good sort of rural community around it. But the good thing is you've also got your city, your big towns, sort of Northampton, Milton Keynes. So there's definitely potential there, and it's nice to think that the track could have a second bite of the cherry. We must, like, realise that it had a lot of problems in the past, and the devil will be in the detail. It's got to be commercially viable, which I guess is why the partnership with Betway. I don't think we can be too stuffy about that. I don't mind Betway's name being in the racetrack. They've still got to acquire fixtures. Again, not easy. But with the news that the grey cloud hanging over Kempton and Chelmsford looking really doomed, it is nice to think that a track, a proper national hunt track, could potentially rise from the ashes. So I think it is definitely a good news story. It must be commercially viable this time. There's got to be a good, solid business plan in place that can help it thrive. It's a very different... It will only be a limited number of fixtures, whereas potentially we'll lose loads if sort of Kempt and Chelmsford go. So it's a very different sort of racetrack to those. But yeah, it was always sort of well supported by the locals, and I'd love to see it resurrected.
Yeah, good news story. A bookmaker coming in to help get a racecourse back on its feet. Over in the US, we have a brave new concept with private equity getting involved potentially with the announcement of the Horse Racing League. They're looking to raise $30 million before they get it off the ground. But this is going to be a team-based competition. Godolphin could be involved, emphasis on could, as well as some other private individuals. It's the brainchild of someone who really helped to develop Formula One, Greg Maffey. An interesting concept, Matt. Is it one that you're in favour of?
I had quite a good think about this actually before we came on air. If it was done in Britain, no, I wasn't a fan of the Racing League, and I tried hard. I was open minded for the Racing League, but it's fair to say, given if we were doing the Racing League, it was going to start in the next sort of week or two. Am I missing it? Absolutely not. So, but that's just me as a personal. I'm not for I'm not for that. I'm obviously team game. I'm a football and cricket fan, but I'm not for franchising and franchising sports. Whereas America is, so it actually might suit them a little bit better. They're a team game with these owners, and that more of a that you're doing a draft and everything at the start of before the season, like they're doing the NFL, and that more franchisey sort of feel. That's American. You know, it's ingrained into American sports in a way, which makes me think that it might be better suited there and come off the ground. But at the end of the day, to me, horse racing, you have your powerful owners and stuff, but it's pretty individual dominated. And I think that's what makes horse racing great in a way. Yeah, the principle in me is completely against franchising in sports. So it's probably not for me in America as well.
Lewis, it's 10 teams, 8 horses, $6 million buy-in. I reckon if we had a whip round in the office, we could get a team together, could we?
A team racing post, yeah, that'd be cool. I think you've got to be careful you don't sort of stifle any innovation. Like, we've been looking for our 2020 for I don't know, decades, haven't we? No one's come up with it. So it's potentially, you know, new investment into the sport. Someone who's obviously had success in Formula One, as you said previously, and I'm all for innovation. I just fear that the team concept has never worked in the past, and I see it struggling ever really working. There will be something out there that can work in racing. I'm not sure the team angle is the way to go. But I think the difference to this with compared to, say, something like the Racing League over here, are this sort of like blue chip feel. If you can get a Godolphin in, you can get Windstar, you can get these big names. It's completely, which was the idea originally for the Racing League, and it just, you know, your Red Bulls of this world, it never took off. It could be a different kettle of fish. I think the draft idea, which is so popular in America, is quite an interesting concept. But this is livestock we're talking about, like horses, you know, they get injured, and sometimes rigid plans, it's hard to make rigid plans and set out a format when you're dealing with horses. So I worry that it might not be the answer, and he's still got to raise a $30 million between now and February to get this off the ground. So it could be one of those things that we actually never hear about in the future, but hopefully he raises the money and they can give it a go, and who knows where it might lead. I'm just a little bit sceptical about the team.
You're cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I think that's the way, John. Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in the sense that it has to be encouraging that you have these big private investors wanting to get involved, that racing is attractive as an investment proposition, and I suppose they'll take heart from the fact that in the US, you've got Tomorrow Golf League, you have these franchise sports that are a little bit left field from a traditional sport, but have landed. What I would say is they have landed because Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy are behind it. As you've touched on, I think we'd need a Godolphin, you'd need a Windstar, you'd need the big ones to get involved, and certainly maybe some outside people as well, be that celebrities or people who can put their name to it, because I think if it ends up getting watered down, it could quite easily be lost.
Yeah. If it's going to work, it's going to work in America, isn't it? Because they can throw some real muscle behind it and hope maybe get some of these star names that you allude to there. It's an interesting concept, but it sounds like it's in a very sort of early stages.
Yeah, definitely in its nascent stage, one to keep an eye on. Something that isn't in its nascent stage is the quest, the odyssey to find a new BHA chair, which feels like it has been going on forever. Now, we're recording this in the morning on Monday, but there has been a development regarding Peter Saville, who has said that his bid to become BHA chair, former BHB chairman, has been rejected, and he has issued a statement questioning the interview process. Now, it's worth noting we've not at this point been in touch with the BHA to see if they wanted to comment on that or had anything to say. But Lewis, it's another development in the hunt for a BHA chair. Are you surprised that Peter Saville has been sort of discounted?
To be honest, John, maybe not. It's Peter Saville was obviously former chair of the BHB when we went through the millennium. I think they maybe want to take this in a different direction this time. What I did like about Peter Saville was he definitely had a plan. which British racing hasn't always had, and its chair hasn't always had. But I never... he did have the backing from a lot of horsemen, but I'd never felt like maybe the governing body was truly going to go down that route. He's obviously disappointed with the process, but I guess when you don't get a job, you tend to be disappointed with the process. So it'll be interesting to see how the BHRA responds to his sort of criticism of the interview process. I think he would have ruffled a few feathers. I think he would have enacted change, and it might have been a positive, but it doesn't actually surprise me that they're going to maybe go down a different route.
And Matt, very pointed comments in his statement about that interview process, a suggestion that he wasn't really asked about the challenges facing British racing. That's his contention, that it was very similar to the previous interview processes, which obviously haven't worked. A lot of frustration from his side. Now, we're not privy to that process, and that is part of the question, I suppose. Should this be played out more publicly? Should we know who's put their name forward? Should they be campaigning, putting their points across? I don't know. What's your take on what we do know?
Yeah, a funny one, really. From initial thoughts, obviously, Mr. Sal was a highly respected person within the sport, but he's not shy of as you say, ruffling a few feathers and being quite a controversial character. Naturally, there's going to be a lot of disappointment if the 250, back in the 250 people in the sport he's had, and we've seen letters in the paper this weekend, Bjorn Nielsen, the owner of Stradivarius, putting Savile's hat into the ring. To me, it really felt like someone's just disappointed that they're not being considered and have sort of blown the steam away. If we are to take what he says about, you know, the interview process, then it is a concern that we're not asking that question. I would feel like that's a few changes in future and future ambitions in any sort of job is, you know, in any job interview is pretty much a necessity. But I'm loath to speculate, to be honest with you. It's interesting. I think we'll need to find out more will come out with this when the other candidates and all the, you know, the prime candidate and the appointment is made. Most jobs don't happen in the, you know, job process don't happen in the public eye, bar, you know, the Prime Minister, as we're seeing at the moment with the Labour leadership contest and Andy Byrne, and that's being played out in the public eye. Whether the BHA chair role needs to do that, I'm not so certain. But just another little spanner in the works, really, in the job of trying to find the BHA chair, which seems to have gone on for rather much longer than it absolutely should have done by now. We should have actually had something in place months ago. So it's a bit messy, shall we say.
A bit messy. Very well surmised. Be sure to keep tabs on racingpost.com and the app for all the latest developments with that story. I will just end talking about the football, which we haven't actually done. There'll be plenty of that on the Racing Post website as well from our brilliant sport team. I want to get your predictions so that next Monday we can either look really clever or really silly. England v Argentina.
I can see it being another real hard-fought match. We never make it easy for ourselves, but I've got a sneaky suspicion we will just about limp over the line, probably maybe 2-1 England after extra time.
Matt Rennie, is it coming
home? 2-1 extra time. Decker's Rice or Elliot Anderson to absolutely smash Lionel Messi early on to let him know we're here. We've got so much more to give still. I actually thought we played all right against Norway. I think they're a better team than Argentina have been facing, and I think Argentina have been quite sort of lethargic throughout their games. And to be honest with you, the World Cup, I know we went and played Scotland, but the one team I want to really beat at the World Cup is Argentina, and then I don't really mind. Well, I'd love to win the World Cup, but I want to beat the Argentinians, to be honest with you. And so 2-1, Harry Kane will score a penalty, and Jude Bellingham will also get on the score sheet because he's just simply, I think, the best attacking midfielder in world football at the moment.
There you have it, Mystic Matt. I also happen to think we might get through, so you have us three to blame if we don't. That is all we have time for on today's edition of The Front Page. My thanks, as ever, to Lewis and Matt for their contributions. Busy old news week. Be sure to keep tabs on the Racing Post, as I said, and tune in next week for the latest edition of The Front Page. Thank you very much for watching and listening.